Okay, turn to Proverbs 11:17. Proverbs 11:17 says, "The merciful man doeth good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh." Let's look at that first part and define the terms. The merciful man doeth good to his own soul. A merciful man is one having or exercising mercy, characterized by mercy. Mercy is forbearance and compassion shown by one person to another who is in his power and who has no claim to receive kindness, kind and compassionate treatment in a case where severity is merited or expected. It says, "The merciful man doeth good." Good is that which is good. It is, in the widest sense, good, whatever is good in itself or beneficial in effect. The phrase "to do good," which is how it's used here, essentially, "he doeth good to his own soul." To do good is to act rightly, fulfill the moral law, to show kindness, to employ oneself in philanthropic work, that would be like charitable work, to improve the condition of, be beneficial to. And then it says he does good to his own soul. And the soul is the principle of life in man or animals, animate existence. It's the principle of thought and action in man, commonly regarded as an entity distinct from the body, the spiritual part of man in contrast to the purely physical. So in other words, if we put the definitions in the verse, the man who is characterized by mercy and therefore shows forbearance and kind and compassionate treatment to himself and others when severity is merited, he acts rightly in fulfillment of God's law toward, shows kindness to, and improves the condition of his own spiritual inward man. Or in other words, the merciful man doeth good to his own soul. You could put it that way too, in less words. So let's look at how this is that the merciful man doeth good to his own soul. Because typically when we think of mercy, we think of mercy being showed to somebody else. So you think of a merciful man doing good to other people that he shows mercy mm-hmm. to. Mm-hmm. But here it says he does good to his own soul. And he essentially does good to his own soul indirectly by doing good to other people. Because doing good to other people ends up benefiting himself and his own soul. It says in 2 Samuel 22:26 that a merciful man will obtain mercy from God, and then in Matthew 5:7 he'll obtain mercy from others, and therefore he indirectly does good to his own soul by showing mercy. So let's look at those two verses. 2 Samuel 22:26. So if you show mercy, you get mercy from God and from other men. And when you do that, you've just done good to your own soul. 2 Samuel 22:26 says, "With the merciful thou wilt show thyself merciful, and with the upright man thou wilt show thyself upright. With the pure thou wilt show thyself pure, and with the froward thou wilt show thyself unsavory." And this is speaking of the Lord. So the Lord will show himself merciful to those who show mercy. And so will men. Men likewise will show mercy to people who are merciful. If you think about it, if somebody could have been harsh and judged you and decided to show mercy, chances are, if the tables turn one day, hopefully you'd remember and show mercy to that man. Now, there will be an example in the Bible of somebody that didn't do that. We'll look at that here in a second. But if you're a betting man, you can probably bet if you showed mercy to somebody else, chances are they would probably show mercy to you. Matthew 5:7. Matthew 5:7 says, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy." Now, of course, that could be obtaining mercy from God or obtaining mercy from other men, both. Now, a merciful man also accrues blessings in his life, and there's at least two reasons or two ways in which he would accrue these blessings, and these blessings, of course, would be good for his own soul. The first way is that the man who shows mercy shall find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. So when he shows mercy, then he gets favor from God and understanding from God, and both of those things are good things, and both of those things would be of a spiritual nature. So he's doing good to his own soul by showing mercy. Let's look at that in Proverbs 3:3-4. It says, "Let not mercy and truth forsake thee, bind them about thy neck, write them upon the table of thine heart." So, apparently, just from this verse, it must be pretty easy for mercy and truth to slip away from us. Because he says to bind it about our necks, to write it upon the table of our hearts. So that just tells me that, you know, sometimes the truth is hard to hold on to or hard to find. And it's easier to be judgmental than mercy. So you got to bind them upon you so they don't get away. Verse 4, "So," if you do that, "so shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man." So here's the spiritual blessings that accrue to the man that shows mercy: favor with God and good understanding from God, both blessings of the soul. So the merciful man doeth good to his own soul, indirectly. And then he that follows after righteousness and mercy finds life, righteousness, and honor. We're told in Proverbs 21 and verse 21. "He that followeth after righteousness and mercy findeth life, righteousness, and honor." Once again, spiritual blessings. He does good to his soul by showing mercy to others. So a merciful man therefore benefits himself and thus does good to his own soul. Now, we probably don't think about mercy in this aspect often, but a merciful man also shows mercy to himself, because just like we can be harsh and judgmental towards others, we can be the same way towards ourselves. And sometimes we need to show ourselves mercy. Sometimes, I know with myself, the person that I'm the hardest on is myself. If I called other people the names that I call myself, I wouldn't have any friends. That's for sure. If you think about it, like when I do something, I'm like, "You idiot!" Like, I wouldn't say that to somebody else, right, that did the same thing. But when I do it, you know, make some mess up on whatever I'm working on or something. You know, so we could all stand to show ourselves probably a little more mercy than we do sometimes. Now, this is not to say that we should treat our sin and our life lightly, right? So when I say have mercy on yourself, I don't mean to say, "Well, you know, yeah, I just sinned, but it's not such a big deal," right? That's not what I'm talking about. So the man that shows mercy to himself doesn't treat his sin lightly, but he also does not condemn himself as a reprobate every time he sins and tells himself that he doesn't love God and God doesn't love him, right? So there's a difference between sinning and saying that was wrong, confessing that, feeling bad for it, and sinning and saying you're just an evil, wicked reprobate, you're not even a child of God, you don't love God, or you wouldn't have done that, and God doesn't love you, right? That would be an unmerciful attitude towards oneself, and you don't want to do that, because God doesn't treat you like that. So why would you treat yourself like that?
Sounds like Satan planting a thought.
That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. Just like he said to Jesus, "If thou be the Son of God." Right, and he does that with us too. "Oh, if you were a child of God, you wouldn't have thought that. You wouldn't have said that. You wouldn't have done that." The merciful man reminds himself of God's mercy and is therefore merciful to himself. And in this, he does good to his own soul. So there's another way that the merciful man does good to his own soul. And then in another way, a merciful man does good to his own soul by lending or giving to others in need. Psalm 37 and verse 26. "And when he does this, he'll be blessed by the Lord." And I'll get to that verse in a second. And he'll do good to his own soul, once again, in an indirect manner. Psalm 37 and verse 26. It says, "He is ever merciful and lendeth, and his seed is blessed." So here, being merciful and lending to those in need. are clearly tied together. And when we do that, God will in turn repay us for what we've lent to others, especially if the person you lend to can't pay you back. And, of course, in the world, you don't lend money to people that can't pay you back. But Christians will lend money to people that can't pay you back. As a matter of fact, we're commanded to loan money to people that can't pay us back. Or even Jesus told us to lend and hope we don't get paid back. Right? Now, that's contrary to everything, you know, that you think about when you're talking about economics. But according to Christ, you know, you lend hoping to receive nothing again, and then you'll be blessed. So anytime you loan money to somebody that's in need, I would just recommend assuming that you don't get it back, not planning or asking to get it back. And if you do, it's okay, but just consider it a charitable gift. Proverbs 19 and verse 17. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again. So you think you're giving to the poor, lending to the poor, but who you're actually lending to is the Lord. It's the Lord is the surety. Think about it that way. The Lord can do that, right? He's got infinite resources. So when you loan to the, give a loan to the poor, the Lord is really the cosigner there, and then the Lord pays it back when that guy can't. You think about it that way. And the man that does this, that has mercy on the poor, he is blessed. Proverbs 14 and verse 21. Proverbs 14:21. He that despiseth his neighbor sinneth, but he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he. Or happy is a synonym for blessed. So when, by being merciful, by lending or giving to the poor, the merciful man therefore indirectly does good to his own soul. He lends to the poor, and the Lord pays him back. He just did good to himself, right? No, the merciful man also doesn't do it for that reason. It happens, but he doesn't think, you know what? I know how I can make some money. I'm going to give to this poor guy, and then the Lord's going to somehow give it back to me plus interest. You don't think about it that way, obviously. But if you're doing it selflessly like you should, yeah, it'll come around, and you'll end up doing good to your own soul. But he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh, the second part of the verse. Cruel, when you're speaking of persons, is disposed to inflict suffering, indifferent to or taking pleasure in another's pain or distress, destitute of kindness or compassion, merciless, pitiless, hard-hearted. Somebody you want to stay away from. That's a sordid, terrible description of a human being. Unfortunately, there are people like that out there that walk among us. Thankfully, there's not that many of them. At least I haven't met that many of them, thankfully. But if it weren't for the grace of God and the restraining hand of God, there'd be a lot more of that. People like that trouble their own flesh. Trouble is to disturb, agitate, ruffle, like water or air, etc. To stir up water is to make it thick or muddy. To make wine thick by stirring up the lees, it's like the sediment at the bottom of it. To make turbid, dim, or cloudy. So that's the primary definition of trouble. Like when it says, does it say in John chapter 5 that the waters were troubled? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he waited for the troubling of the water. The first after the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole. Yeah, so there's an example of that definition there. But secondly, it is to disturb, derange, to interfere with, interrupt, to hinder, mar. It's also to put into a state of mental agitation or disquiet, to disturb, distress, grieve, perplex. And it's also to do harm or hurt to injure, to molest, oppress. And flesh is the animal or physical nature of man. Human nature is subject, corporeal necessities. Human nature as subject. There's probably a typo there. I don't think that sounds right. The animal or physical nature of man, human nature as subject, corporeal necessities and limitations. Probably subject to corporeal necessities and limitations, I would think. So, in other words, if we put the definitions in, the man who is disposed to inflict suffering, is indifferent to or takes pleasure in another's pain or distress, is destitute of kindness or compassion, and is merciless, pitiless, and hard-hearted, that man agitates, disquiets, disturbs, distresses, grieves, perplexes, harms, hurts, injures, molests, and oppresses his own self, including his physical body. Just like the merciful man does good to his soul, the cruel man, which is the opposite of mercy, does evil to his own self, to his own flesh. Those who are cruel show no mercy. Let me just show you this. I mean, the definitions obviously bear that out, but the Bible does too. In Jeremiah 6 and verse 23, you know, this can come as a result of natural consequences, like you're really nasty and mean to other people, and then somebody gets their chance and puts a beating on you, you know, like we were just talking about. Or it can come about with divine providence, how God sees how you act, and then he troubles your flesh. You know, so it can come about either way, naturally or supernaturally. Jeremiah 6 and verse 23. Jeremiah 6:23, they shall lay hold on bow and spear, they are cruel and have no mercy. Their voice roareth like the sea, and they ride upon horses set in array as men of war against thee, O daughter of Zion. They are cruel and have no mercy. So we see these are antonyms. And those who are cruel will be punished severely by God and therefore bring trouble upon their own flesh. This was what happened to Israel after they were judged for their sin that went on for so long, and the Lord finally destroyed them with the Babylonians. And here Jeremiah is lamenting about what happened to them. And in Lamentations 4, 3 through 6, it says, Lamentations 4, 3 through 6, even the sea monsters draw out the breast. They give suck to their young ones. The daughter of my people has become cruel like the ostriches in the wilderness. Now, in Job, it tells us that the ostriches are so stupid that they bury their eggs in the earth and then forget where they put them, and they step on them and crush their own eggs. They're that stupid. And he says, my people's become cruel like the ostriches in the wilderness. And they did, in fulfillment of prophecy, the women ate their own children. Right? They were like the ostrich. And we do this with, you know, people do this with abortion to this day. Right, that don't have natural affection for their children. The tongue of the sucking child cleaveth to the roof of his mouth for thirst. The young children ask bread, and no man breaketh it unto them. They that did feed delicately are desolate in the streets. They that were brought up in scarlet embrace dunghills. Things can turn around pretty quickly. People that were wealthy are now lying on a big pile of manure. For the punishment of the iniquity of the daughter of my people is greater than the punishment of the sin of Sodom, that was overthrown as in a moment, and no hands stayed on her. These people were become cruel, and look, the punishment from God comes even worse than it came on Sodom. So the man that's cruel will end up troubling his own flesh because of the judgment of God against him. It says in James 2:13 that we will have judgment without mercy if we show no mercy. James 2:13. And this would be the definition of cruelty, or at least, you know, maybe a mild version of it. James 2:13. It says, for he shall have judgment without mercy that has showed no mercy, and mercy rejoiceth against judgment. So if we show no mercy and are cruel, then we will have judgment and not be shown mercy. We'll trouble our own flesh. And now let's get to the what I mentioned at the very beginning of this study, and that's in Matthew 18. This is an example of somebody that you would think would have been merciful, somebody that had received great mercy and yet was unmerciful in a lesser matter than was shown mercy to him. So he was shown mercy, he was shown greater mercy, and he wouldn't even show lesser mercy to somebody else, and he ended up being judged severely for it. Matthew 18, 23 through 35. This is a parable. Jesus says, "Therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king which would take account of his servants. And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him which owed him 10,000 talents. But forasmuch as he had not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife, and children, and all that he had, and payment to be made. And the servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. Then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion, and loosed him, and forgave him the debt." So he was merciful to him. "But the same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants, which owed him 100 pence, which is a pittance compared to 10,000 talents. And he laid his hands on him, and he laid hands on him and took him by the throat, saying, Pay me that thou owest. And his fellow servant fell down at his feet and besought him, saying, Have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. And he would not." See, he said the same thing. Say, you know, this guy said to his Lord, you know, have patience with me, I'll pay thee all. And his Lord had mercy. And then this guy that doesn't know him nearly as much, he asked the same thing, and he won't do it. And he would not, but went and cast him into prison till he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servants saw what was done, they were very sorry, and came and told unto their Lord all that was done. Then his Lord, after that he had called him, said unto him, O thou wicked servant, I forgave thee all that debt, because thou desirest me. Shouldest not thou also have had compassion on thy fellow servant, even as I had pity on thee? And his Lord was wroth, and delivered him to the tormentors, till he should pay all that was due unto him. So likewise shall my heavenly Father do also unto you, if ye from your hearts forgive not every one his brother their trespasses." So the moral of the parable is that if we don't show mercy, God won't show mercy to us. Just like it said back there in 2 Samuel, "With the merciful thou wilt show thyself merciful." Now, it's interesting to me, just as a side note, I don't know what kind of a king would loan some bum that couldn't pay him back 10,000 talents. I don't quite understand that. But anyway, the point is, I mean, you know, sometimes parables don't have a direct correlation with every little thing. The point is that we owe a huge sin debt to God, right? More than you could ever pay, 10,000 talents worth. And God's forgiven us so much, which is... anything that somebody owes us in comparison to that would be a pittance. It'd be nothing. So we have no right to not show mercy to somebody else because we've been shown so much mercy from God. And if we are cruel to others, we will trouble our own flesh. The Lord will judge us for it. So that takes care of verse 17. Okay, turn to Proverbs 11:18. "The wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward." Let's look at that first part. The wicked worketh a deceitful work. A wicked person is bad in moral character, disposition, or conduct, inclined or addicted to willful wrongdoing, practicing or disposed to practice evil, morally depraved. Work, it says, "The wicked worketh a deceitful work." To work is to do, perform, practice a deed, course of action, labor, task, business, occupation, process, etc. To do something evil or harmful, to commit a sin, wrong, or crime. He works a deceitful work. A deceitful work is a work that is full of deceit, given to deceiving or cheating, misleading, false, fallacious. It equals deceptive. And then it says a deceitful work is one that is full of deceit. Deceit is the action or practice of deceiving, concealment of the truth in order to mislead, deception, fraud, cheating, false dealing. And then a work in the noun form, the wicked worketh, the deceitful work, is something that is or was done, what a person does or did, an act, deed, proceeding, business. So in other words, men who are morally depraved and are in bad moral character, disposition, or conduct do deceptive and misleading things. And they do it for advantage. They do it to gain something, as we will see here. Because when you compare the first half with the second half, you see that they're connected with a contrasting conjunction, but. The wicked worketh the deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. So these two thoughts are connected. What's said in the second half has to do with what's said in the first half. The second clause shows that they who sow righteousness have a sure reward. In other words, their honest work will be rewarded. By contrast, the dishonest work of the wicked will not be rewarded. The intent of the deceitful work of the wicked is to acquire wealth or some advantage. That's why you deceive somebody, right? To get something out of them by trickery. But their deceptive actions will not yield the results that they hoped for. That's how it works, right? You think that you can get ahead by being dishonest, and sometimes you do for a time, but the Lord has a way of righting those wrongs and not allowing that to happen. The Lord had prohibited this kind of thing in the law of Moses, and under that law, you can turn to Leviticus 6, 1 through 5, under that law, if a man made gain of his neighbor deceitfully, he was punished by having to pay back the neighbor what he took plus 20% interest. Leviticus 6, 1 through 5. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, if a soul sin and commit a trespass against the Lord and lie unto his neighbor in that which was delivered unto him to keep, so he's supposed to keep something, he says, oh yeah, somebody stole it, or you know, something happened to it, and he steals it, in other words, by deceit, or in fellowship, or in a thing taken away by violence, or hath deceived his neighbor, or have found that which was lost, and lieth concerning it, and sweareth falsely, in any of these things, in any of all these that a man doeth, sinning therein, then it shall be, because he hath sinned and is guilty, that he shall restore that which he took violently away, or the thing which he hath deceitfully gotten, or that which was delivered him to keep, or the lost thing which he found, or all that about which he hath sworn falsely, he shall even restore it in the principal, that's what he actually took, and shall add the fifth part more thereto, that's 20%, and give it unto him to whom it appertaineth in the day of his trespass offering. So, if he got something by dishonest gain, he would give it back plus the fifth part, plus 20%. That's called a law of restitution. And that's what kind of laws we should have. That's what kind of punishments we should have. A lot of times nowadays, if you rip somebody off, you may go to jail for it or something, but a lot of times that person isn't even made whole. They might say, well, you know, the money's gone now, sorry. We'll put him in jail for a while. Well, what good does that do? He ought to be made to pay it back. In the book of Job, we're told that those who get wealthy by dishonest means, such as bribery or deceit, will not prosper, but will be destroyed. Job 15:34-35. It says, for the congregation of hypocrites shall be desolate, and fire shall consume the tabernacles of bribery. They conceive mischief and bring forth vanity, and their belly prepareth deceit. So they will be punished for it. They won't end up getting away with it. They'll be destroyed. Now, the wicked are deceptive in their dealings with others. And sometimes they do well for a time, but they don't end up prospering in the end. And we have to remember this. If you ever forget it, go read Psalm 37. If you ever see somebody that appears to be getting away with murder, the Lord will eventually take care of that. I don't know if I gave you the verses. Hosea 12, 7 through 8. Hosea 12, which is right after Daniel. He is a merchant. He's talking about Ephraim, Israel. He is a merchant. The balances of deceit are in his hand. He loveth to oppress. And Ephraim said, yet I am become rich. I have found me out substance. In all my labors they shall find none iniquity in me that were sin. So they, you know, they get away with it for a while sometimes. He's got the balances of deceit in his hand. He's using dishonest ways of making money, ripping people off, cheating them. But they're not going to prosper in the end. They'll eventually end up reaping what they've sown. Let's look at Galatians 6, verses 7 through 8, which is kind of this ties into the previous proverb that we looked at. Galatians 6, 7 through 8. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. So if you sow to the flesh, you sow corruption. If you sow deceit and trickery and dishonesty and fraud and things like that, you'll end up reaping what you sowed. Eventually, sometimes it takes a while. Payday doesn't always come on Friday, but it does come. Those who plow wickedness will reap iniquity, we're told. I should have kept my finger there in Hosea. Hosea chapter 10 and verse 13. Hosea 10:13. Ye have plowed wickedness, ye have reaped iniquity, ye have eaten the fruit of lies, because thou didst trust in thy way, in the multitude of thy mighty men. Plow wickedness, reap iniquity. You reap what you sow. Your sin will find you out, as the Bible says. And if you sow iniquity, you'll reap vanity. Proverbs 22 and verse 8. Says, he that soweth iniquity shall reap vanity, and the rod of his anger shall fail. So that's kind of interesting. It says, if you plow wickedness, you reap iniquity, and if you sow iniquity, you reap vanity. So you plow up in order to sow to reap. So when you plow wickedness, you end up with iniquity, which ends in vanity. Which vanity is?
Okay, 22:8.
Okay,
run that by again.
Well, in Hosea it said that if you plow wickedness, you reap iniquity, mm-hmm. and then this says, he that soweth iniquity shall reap vanity. So I was just thinking you plow first, wow. And then you sow, and then you reap. Mm-hmm. So wickedness, iniquity, and then vanity. Mm-hmm. And then in Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 8, should be a familiar verse to us. Ecclesiastes 10:8, he that diggeth a pit shall fall into it, and whoso breaketh an hedge, a serpent shall bite him. So those who would harm others will get harmed themselves, and oftentimes by the very means that they were trying to use to hurt others. Now, the second half of the proverb, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. And we should remember these verses, because it's tempting in our human nature to cheat, to try to get ahead, right? Sometimes you think, well, it'd be really easy if I just cheated, or I just lied, or, you know, just fudged on this, and then I didn't have to tell somebody that something was actually wrong with this product, and I could sell it, and I could make a bunch of money, right? So you have those temptations sometimes to think, well, you know, and if I tell the truth, I'm going to end up losing. So it'd be better for me if I just lied. And, you know, well, you always want to remember verses like this when you start thinking like that, because it doesn't work out that way. God will, he's not mocked. He will, you will reap what you sow. And if you sow righteousness and you do the right thing, even when it's hard and even when it costs you in the short term, you will have a sure reward. To sow means to perform the action of scattering or depositing seed on or in the ground so that it may grow. Figuratively, it means to disseminate or spread, to endeavor, to propagate or extend in various contexts. He that soweth righteousness, so this is obviously used figuratively here, but just like when you sow seed, especially think about something like grass seed, where you just go and you just spread it all over the place, right? Where you're not necessarily dropping it in its particular spot. You disseminate it, you just spread it wide, and that's when you do that with, you sow righteousness, you just spread it out. Anywhere you have opportunity, you disseminate that righteousness. And when you do that, you exercise righteousness in all areas of your life, in everything. You will have a sure reward. Righteousness is justice, uprightness, rectitude, conformity of life to the requirements of the divine or moral law, virtue, integrity. When you sow something like that, you'll have a sure reward, which is a reward that is free from or not exposed to danger or risk, not liable to be injured or destroyed, safe or secure, trustworthy, firm, steadfast, that can be depended or relied on, not liable to fail or disappoint expectation, trustworthy, reliable. You're going to have a reliable reward. And a reward is a return, a recompense made to or received by a person for some favor, service, or merit, or for hardship endured. So sometimes that's when we get our reward from the Lord for the hardships that we endure. You know, Paul said that henceforth there was laid up for him a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, should give unto him at that day for all the things that he had endured. He had fought a good fight, he'd finished his course, he'd kept the faith, he said, and therefore there was a reward laid up for him. So in other words, he that disseminates and spreads uprightness, virtue, and integrity as he lives, works, and deals with others can depend upon and expect a good recompense for his labor. Doesn't always happen every time immediately, right? When you make that hard decision and you honor your guarantee and it costs you a bunch, maybe for the moment you've lost, but you'll end up gaining. You'll have a sure reward because you worked righteousness and you did the right thing. We're told back in Hosea again, Hosea 10 and verse 12, that those who sow in righteousness will reap righteousness in mercy. Hosea 10 and verse 12. Hosea 10, 12. Sow to yourselves in righteousness, reap in mercy, break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord till he come and rain righteousness upon you. So if you sow righteousness, the Lord will rain righteousness upon you. It'll come back to you. The righteous that are not weary in well-doing will reap a good reward. You just have to be persistent in it sometimes. Galatians 6, 8 through 9. Galatians 6, 8 through 9. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. So we don't be weary in well-doing, for in due season, that means sometimes it takes a while, right? It's going to come, but it's not going to be immediate always. We shall reap if we faint not. You just don't want to give up too early. I remember, it was in some business class that I was taking for something that I did in the past, and they had a a figure, a cartoon-looking thing, and the guy was had like a pickaxe, and he was mining for gold, and he was, you know, burrowing into the earth, and you could see the gold. He was inches away from it, but he'd gone so far, and he's just like, ah, there's nothing here. He's just ready to give up, and if he'd just swung the axe a couple of more times, it was there, right? So we can't be weary in well-doing, because we will reap if we faint not. But if you give up, you won't. The Lord says, if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. So you got to keep on keeping on, trusting that the Lord will reward your labor. And those who sow bountifully in giving to the needs of others will be rewarded bountifully by God. I got a number of verses for this. 2 Corinthians 9, 6 through 15. That's the first one. 2 Corinthians 9, 6 through 15. This is referring to giving to those who are in need. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man, according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that ye, always having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. See, when you give bountifully to the needs of others, God is able to make all grace abound towards you. You reap what you sow. You just can't be weary in well-doing. As it is written, he hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remaineth forever. That's like sowing, right? He hath dispersed abroad, that's sowing. He has sown righteousness. Now he that ministereth seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, and multiply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness. Being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. So those who are bountiful in their giving will be enriched with all bountifulness from God. For the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saints, he's talking about the poor saints in Jerusalem that they had taken up a collection for because they were in a really, in a bad way, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God. Whiles by the experiment of this ministration they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ, and for your liberal distribution unto them and unto all men. And by their prayer for you, which long after you, for the exceeding grace of God in you. Thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. So he that soweth righteousness hath a sure reward. When you sow, you give, you get it back. The Lord guarantees it. Proverbs 11, 24 through 26. I don't have, I think it's Luke 6, but given it shall be given unto you. Pressed down, good measure, running over, shall men give into your bosom, it says. Proverbs 11, 24 through 26. There is that scattereth, that's sowing, right? And yet increaseth. And there is that withholdeth more than his meat, but attendeth to poverty. A lot of times we think, oh, if I give to the needs of other people, I won't have for myself, and I'll impoverish myself by giving to others. But that's not how it works. When you scatter, you increase. When you withhold more than is meat, you tend to poverty. It'd be like, you know, a farmer that goes out and just says, well, if I sow all these seeds, what am I going to have to eat, right? Well, when you sow the seeds, you get more to eat, right? So, doesn't mean when you put it that way, it's not quite so hard to understand. Verses 25 and 26, the liberal soul, now this is liberal used in, you know, its primary sense, not Hillary Clinton liberal. The liberal soul, meaning the generous soul. See, liberals today are generous with other people's money, right? Truly liberal people are generous with their own money. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him. But blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. So there are those three verses, three in a row, the Lord reiterates there that when you give to the needs of others, it'll come back to you. You sow righteousness, you'll have a sure reward, a guaranteed reward. Proverbs 28 and verse 27. Not to mention, Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. And I can think of few things that give you more satisfaction and happiness than giving to the needs of others, to helping other people. Proverbs 28 and verse 27. He that giveth unto the poor shall not lack, but he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse. The Lord will see to it that you don't lack. You sow righteousness, you'll have a sure reward. But if you see a poor person, a truly poor person, and are cruel and don't show mercy to him, you have many a curse. One more, Proverbs 19 and verse 17. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again. That's why the reward is sure, because the Lord is the surety. He's the one that guarantees it. Now, it's said there that the wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. The fruit of righteousness is sown in peace, not in deceit. James 3 and verse 18. If you want to reap righteousness, it's not by sowing deceitfully. James 3:18. It says, and the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So in conclusion, be honest and always do the right thing, and God will reward you. Even if it doesn't seem like it's going to work out or you can't see how it will, he will reward you. Be honest, always do the right thing, and you will have a sure reward. And that takes care of verse 18.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.